Remarks of the President, St. Paul, Minnesota, 28 October 1952.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Chairman, distinguished guests on this platform, and ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be back in St. Paul once more. I remember very well how kind you were to me when I was here in 1948. You gave me just such a reception as this, which I certainly did appreciate. Then you went out and voted for me on Election Day, and that was all for the good, too. That helped me a lot. Is that she will do as well or better by the new standard bearer of the Democratic Party, Abby Stevenson of Illinois. Yeah. I urge you to vote for him and for his running mate, John Sparkman, and for all the fine progressive candidates on the Democratic Farmer Labor ticket here in Minnesota. That is the purpose of my visit here to St. Paul today. For 5 weeks now, I've been traveling across the country campaigning for a Democratic victory in this election. I'm not doing this for myself. I'm not running for any office. I expect nothing from Governor Stevenson, and I've asked him for nothing and don't expect to. The Democratic Party and the people of this country have given me all the reward a man could ever want or ever seek. I'm more than happy and grateful for what the Democratic Party has done for me. And I'm going to continue to try to repay that and show my gratefulness. I'm not like some of these birds, get everything you can out of the party and then get rich and go off and join the Republicans. I'm going to be a Democrat. I've entered this campaign on my own account. My own account and on account of the fact that I believe there are things at stake in this election that we must be informed on. I've come here with a deep conviction that your future, our whole country's future, is at stake in this election. The choice is yours to make, but I'm deeply anxious that you make it on the basis of your own interest and in the light of full facts. The people cannot make a choice that will be right for them and good for them unless they have the facts. And so I made it my business to bring the facts to the people. I've gone around the country reading a record on the Republican Party and on their candidate for president. This has enraged the Republicans no end, and that makes me very happy. It has infuriated the one-party press in lofty editorials from coast to coast. I've been accused of mudslinging. When the Republican candidate for president permitted Senator Taft to tell the waiting world that they agreed on all domestic issues, I pointed out that this meant surrender to the Republican old guard. That was called mudslinging by the president. But it was a fact, is and was a fact today, when the Republican candidate began to shout that the Democratic Party had was too well disposed toward the Soviets at the close of World War II, I pointed out, citing his own book and his own testimony before Congress, that he had suffered more than most from soft delusions about Soviet intentions. The editorials professed deep shock that I should dare to throw the general's own words back at him. But they were the facts, right in the record, he had made for himself. And the Republican candidate, so recently Supreme Commander of the Allied Powers, began to promise fantastic cuts in our defense budget and to aid to our allies, I pointed out that this involved abandoning our allies and crippling our own armed forces. Again, I was accused of mudslinging, but that was the plain, hard fact. The general's promises meant nothing but surrender to the policies of isolationism in the guise of a budget cut. I'm here to say to you that I've had a hand in 18 budgets of this United States government, and I've made eight of of them myself. I know more about the budget of the United States than any man alive except the budget director. When the Republican candidate of his own free will and motion embraced Jenner of Indiana and McCarthy of Wisconsin and endorsed them both for re-election as members of his great crusade, I pointed out that these two men had falsely slandered his own great benefactor, George C. Marshall, and he did not come to George C. Marshall's defense until I forced him to make a statement on it. I call that action a betrayal of morality and principle. The editorial screamed mudslinging, but I stated the facts, and I was right. When the candidate accepted Chapman Rivercombe of West Virginia into his crusade, I pointed out that this man's record was so shameful and full of prejudice that even Thomas Dewey refused to endorse him in 1948. I stated that the present candidate must take responsibility for the company he keeps. You remember old dog Trey, don't you? The very newspapers that had praised Dewey 4 years ago when he rejected this same association hurled cries of foul blow at me for even bringing up the subject. Dewey himself burst out hysterically into shouts of lies and treason aimed at the President of the United States. Yet what I had done was to point up the fact that Dewey's own conduct showed far greater scruples than the present candidate has now displayed. The comparison was all in Dewey's favor. Perhaps that's what upset him so. Perhaps that's what disturbs the editor. Maybe they are all the man they now support. Whatever they may feel, there's one thing I'm sure of. If they are startled by the words I've used in this campaign, they should be shocked and horrified by the facts which I have brought out. Instead of hurling epithets at me, they should be calling on their favorite candidate to face up to the grave defects in his own course of conduct and in his party's record. But that, I fear, the Republican politicians and the one-party press will never do. The last thing in the world they want to do is to face the facts and run on the record. The Republicans are well aware that they cannot win this election if their past performance is exposed to public view. That is really why they yell so loudly every time I make a speech. I tell the truth on them and it hurts. People yell at me as I go down the street, "Give them hell, Harry." Well now, I think that's a pretty bad reputation for a good Baptist to have. The only thing I'm doing is to tell the truth, and it's a lot worse than giving them hell. You see, the whole strategy of the Republicans in this campaign has been to hide their record all they can. That's why they chose a military hero for their candidate. And that is why, in the last month of the campaign, they've started to sing the Me Too song that Dewey used to sing, the same old Me Too song that Wilkie sang before him. For 3 years and 11 months out of every 4 years, the Republicans spend their time fighting and opposing almost every measure to benefit the people and to help build up our country. They violently dislike the things the New Deal and the Fair Deal stand for, and they make no secret of it in between elections. Then in October of each presidential election year, they always realize that the people really like the progress the Democrats have brought them. So the Republicans have no choice but to start singing Me Too in the hope that you forget the record or that you believe this deathbed repentance act of theirs is honest and sincere. Well, you didn't believe them in 1944, and I was in that campaign too. You didn't believe them in 1948, and I had something to do with that campaign too. And they've spent their time between elections proving just how right you were in not believing them. In the campaign of 1948, they said they were for Social Security. And they came right back to Congress and voted against Social Security improvements. They said they were for housing, Then they fought low-rent housing every year from 1949 up to now. They said they were for helping schools, and they voted against aid to education. They said they were for helping farmers, and they voted against 90% price supports. But now, in the closing weeks of this campaign, they've gone back to the Me Too song once more. They say they are for Social Security, although their candidate for president has compared it to being in jail. They say they are for supporting farm prices, although they forgot to put that in their platform. I wish you'd read that Republican platform. It's a dinger. It's the best piece of gobbledygook I've run across in 44 years, reading platform. They say they are for labor unions, but they're going to keep the Taft-Hartley law. In fact, they endorse it in their convention. They say they are for civil liberty, and they ask for the re-election of Senator McCarthy to help protect the Bill of Rights. He doesn't know it's in the Constitution. My friends, the only thing to say to this Republican Me Too campaign is the same thing you said before. What you do speaks so loud that I can't hear what you say. That's what you're going to say to me. Now, it's quite clear that the Republicans fear you may do just that. The Me Too song did not work for them in 1940, or in 1944, or in 1948. And this time, while they are using it, they are not counting on it quite as much as they used to. Apparently, they have decided that it's not enough. They must do something more. And so, they've injected another element into their national campaign. The element of smear and fear. The element of slander and character assassination. If the Republicans can't fool the people on the issues by saying Me Too, they think perhaps the tactics of Joe McCarthy will get the people so confused and fearful and suspicious that they will forget the issue. They are applying tactics to the nation this year that they have tested out before in certain states, in California and Maryland and Utah, among others. Now you are seeing them tried nationally, even here in Minnesota. In your own city, this Republican smear business is now being used against one of the finest and most liberal and loyal Americans in the Congress of the United States, my friend Gene McCarthy. Gene McCarthy is a man who has fought his whole life against the bad conditions that breed communism here at home. A man who's fought staunchly for all our programs to stop the spread of communism abroad. He's a good father. He's a good citizen. He's a good Catholic. Your own friend and townsman, and he's my friend, and I'm proud to acknowledge it publicly. My friends, if they can get away with this, if you let them smear Gene McCarthy, then I expect they'll feel their tactics can be used anywhere, anytime, against anyone. They must look upon this as a real test. And my friend, so do I. For if Gene McCarthy is not saved from this sort of thing, then nobody is saved. Nobody in St. Paul, nobody in Minnesota, nobody in the whole United States. Of all the issues raised in this campaign, this is the most serious and the most dangerous. If Joe McCarthyism can triumph over a good man like Gene McCarthy, the rights and liberties of all Americans will be in deadly peril. And that means you, my friends, each and every one of you. We must not let this happen. You must not let it happen. It should not happen anywhere. I urge you, think carefully about the decision you must make next Tuesday. Do not be misled by the military splendor of a five-star candidate. Do not be misled by Republican Me Too promises that are sure to be forgotten when election time is past. Above all, Do not be deceived by slander and false rumor and character assassination. Remember who you are and what you are. You are free men and women and Americans. You are the sovereigns in this democracy of ours. It is up to you to choose your government. You must then live by the choice for 4 long years. When you make that vital choice, make it in the light of the facts as they are. Make it in the light of your own interests and your country's interests. Always remember, vote for the good of this great republic. Vote for what is good for you and what is good for the free world. If you do that, if you think these things through as you should, I know exactly what will happen when you go to the polls. You will vote for a fine man to represent you in the United States Senate, Bill Carson. He will make a good teammate for Hubert Humphrey. You will vote to vindicate your friend and neighbor, Gene McCarthy. You will vote for yourselves a good progressive governor in Arbor Freeman. And for president, my friends, you will select a man who has shown courage and wisdom and great strength of character in this campaign. A man who is talking sense to the American people, taking a stand on every issue without fear or favor. A most able and progressive governor of one of our great states, Adlai Stevenson of Illinois, New York.